You're listening to the Dead Noise Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. Please subscribe and enjoy today's episode. Welcome back, Dead Noise listeners, and do I have a tasty treat for you today. It's been almost 3 years since I first linked up with Charlie Robinson, shortly after the release of his book, The Octopus of Global Control. In the same vein of John Perkins' Confessions of an Economic Hitman, Charlie takes no prisoners when it comes to exposing the system that is controlling our world today. When we first chatted all those years ago, we discussed the flaws in the 9/11 narrative and the history of the Bush's involvement. During that interview, we touched on the government's quest for greater control through our media. Now, today, we're in the midst of a global pandemic that is allegedly killing millions and destroying the lives of many more. A voice like Charlie's is so important at a time of celebrity-driven dribble controlling our big tech platforms and media landscape. Charlie has been busy since our last episode, with him releasing a book with Anna Kapoulkos, Jeff Berwick, titled The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire, and his own podcast, Macroaggressions. This is a great podcast today, and I really hope you enjoy the episode. Charlie, thanks for being back. Great to have you back on the show. It's been too long. I think June 20, 2019 is the last time we spoke, which is almost 2 years. The world was normal. Give me a bit of a background as to what's been happening. I know you've launched a new podcast called Macroaggressions, which is doing really well. A follow-up book, would you say? It's a follow-up to The Octopus of Global Control, written with Jeff Berwick, The Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. And you've been busy. I've been watching from afar in Australia. Obviously, you've been making a few appearances on podcasts. On podcasts. And look, mate, fill me in the last 2 years before we get into this crazy election, which we're gonna go pretty heavy on today. And just let me know how you've been and what's been happening.
Sure. I mean, I kind of felt like laughing, like, so what's new since we last talked? Oh, only the world has been turned upside down. Yeah, I started this second book with Jeff Berwick in the summer of 2018. And I was in Costa Rica and I had been talking to him earlier about it. And I came up with this idea for this concept that he made a comment to me that it's all coming down, you know, like it's all coming down, man. And I was like, like what exactly are you talking about? He's like, financial system, government, you know, monetary system. It's a house of cards. It's not meant to be around forever. You know, we had a pretty good talk about it. And then when I was in he said, we should work on something. We should write a book or something together. And I was like, I'd like to do that. Let me just think let me just come up with some ideas and things like that. And when I went to Costa Rica, that conversation that I had with him stuck in my mind, where it was like, it's all coming down. And I was like a building, like a controlled demolition. And so I wrote out the outline and sort of explained where I was going and sent it over to Jeff. And he was like, oh yeah, this is it. This is what we're talking about. So we'd been working on that for a while, and we thought we were going to have that done by March of this year. We were close to being done. I mean, it was just about done. And then the corona situation kicked off, and we were like, I think we should hang on. I think we should wait and try to incorporate this into the book. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be very relevant. So we gave it like 5 months. Then we went back and put it in, you know, weaved it in throughout the whole book. And released the book on the Friday before elections, and on election day, which is Tuesday, so 4 days later, it was a number one bestseller both here and in Australia, which we found ironic. We found it great, but it was also ironic because the paperback book version of our book was not available in Australia for some reason. I don't know why. The Kindle was, but not the paperback. So I don't know if we offended Amazon or if Amazon had some own issues that was going on, but so that's one component I've been working on. I also started a podcast called Macroaggressions, like you mentioned earlier this year. I I had recorded, I'd pre-recorded a bunch of episodes in advance, and then we wound up launching that March 7th. And it was like right when the corona situation kicked off and everybody was stuck, you know, everybody was going into their house. So my ratings for this new show like went off the charts. I was like, hey, this is easy, you know? And my engineer guy, Tony, was like, he's like, no, it's not supposed to happen this fast. I'm like, listen, we got a captive audience. Like, I think we might've timed this right, you know? And he's like, well, it's looking pretty good. So I've been doing the podcast. I've been writing the book and trying to just make sense of this whole world. It's got a little bit of a feel like stuff from my octopus book. I can see some of the same people making appearances. I can see some of the same tactics in 2020 being used like that I'd been writing about back in 2017. So there's similarities. You know, I can see these. You know, I'm not going to say I was completely expecting coronavirus situation, but I was expecting something. I was expecting some bullshit, you know, some fake thing, something that was going to be made. And when I say fake, I mean fake in the way terrorism is fake in the United States. The statistics show that people inside the United States are 7 times more likely to get killed by a vending machine falling on them than to die by a terrorist in the United States. But yet we spend $1 trillion on all that stuff. So I figured there would be some new boogeyman, you know, some invisible boogeyman that we could spend a lot of money and get everybody scared of. But I did not see the coronavirus situation coming. Maybe I should have, but it did catch us a little bit off guard. But hey, that's what we're working with now. It's been a crazy couple of months. But between the timing of releasing my podcast and the timing of releasing the book, my timing is good. 2020 sucks, but at least my timing on these things has been okay. But I would gladly settle for having bad timing with everything than to have the year that we've had, because what we've had has been. Boy, I don't know. I don't know how we get ourselves out of a situation like this. It's rough, and of course, I don't need to explain that to you. You're living in the epicenter of it.
You touched on a few things just then that really did interest me. I think your podcast definitely was really good timing. And one thing that you do great on your podcast is you hit several both sides of the coin. You don't stick to the left or the right, like many people in the alternate media space are doing. I feel like lots of people have jumped on the bandwagon and have really towed their line because they can captive an audience, purely be going hard right with a lot of conspiracy theory based supporting, you know, we can get into QAnon and things like that later, or hard left where you sort of, you tackle both sides, and it's a really great podcast. So I definitely recommend all of the listeners to jump on and have a listen. And obviously releasing a book on what they're doing right now from a government standpoint and a controlled demolition couldn't be a better title, in my opinion. Yeah. It does all seem like this. It seems like they're setting us up to pull this current system down, which is scary. And it's something I never saw happening in, you know, I didn't see it happening so soon, to say the least. Either. One of the big ways they're doing this, and we're gonna ease into the 2020 election, but I think where we have to start when we talk about this election, and one of the most controlling and deciding things that really impacted it, was big tech controlling the information coming out, whether it be Hunter Biden's laptop, Ukraine, stuff with Trump that wasn't coming out as well, but. It was really censoring the Republicans and Trump's campaign, which just gives the right and the Republicans more steam to say that they are full of shit and that they are an evil group controlling the whole narrative. For you, I mentioned off podcast as well that I noticed you were even over the last year or so, you had your Twitter suspended and things like that for certain tweets.
Yeah.
You've probably had it on Facebook too, I think. For me, I sort of disconnect from social media, but I do follow it from afar. How do you think this role is played with big tech deciding the election, or at least inciting certain sides' hatred and controlling the overall narrative of this election?
Yeah, they're a huge part of it. They've been involved in this for a while. I place the blame fully on the social media companies, but I do also understand that they're taking their orders from groups above them, from the Atlantic Council, which is NATO, and Bilderberg, and you know, the German Marshall Fund and the Poynter Institute, all these NGOs that are filled up with globalist type people, or people that are running high-ranking politicians, high-ranking business people, people that are, high-ranking in big pharma and this, they all come together in these different groups. Council on Foreign Relations deals mostly with like media type personalities and that. So these people are getting marching orders from somebody above them. And in, it must've been a year and a half ago, maybe 2 years ago, I got my hands on this like 40 page investment prospectus that was sent out by David Brock, who runs a company called Media Matters. And he was looking for money. He was looking for investment. He was looking for investors for them to do this new initiative that they wanted to put forth, and they needed to raise money. And so this was the pitch deck for it. And it said, "What does success look like?" And it was like, every time Donald Trump says anything, we attack him. We get him, we try to work on the mainstream media to get them deplatformed, to get him to stop covering this, that, and the other. He was just going on with their agenda. But then it also said, we have the agreement of Facebook, Google, and Twitter. They have agreed to deplatform voices tied to Donald Trump, or voices that we deem to be a threat to our project or whatever. So right then he was telling his investors that they have the social media companies on board with them, that they've agreed to censor the people that they want censored, or to deplatform the people that need to be deplatformed. So they can't, the big tech companies can't deny this anymore. They've tried to say, they've got a million lies, but the truth is they're involved in this. And of course, they're never going to say that. They're not going to say, "Oh, we're censoring one side or the other." But they're also not going to say that they're being told to censor a particular site. I'm not on the right team or the left team, which is the reason why I'm able to, critique both sides. And you're right that people that sort of pick one side to go hard after, and they do much better. Like, they would have more viewers and everything, but I'm not interested in that. I'm not, I don't want to be like the Fox News on the right or the MSNBC on the left. I want to be like just as objective as I can. And I don't like either party here, but I'll tell you what has been happening over the last year. And I think it goes without saying, I'm not a huge fan of Donald Trump either. But I have been finding myself defending him a lot, and not because I like him, but because the attacks on the left are so unhinged, and the treatment by the media is so disgusting. And like I say, I mean, I don't like the guy. I don't like Trump's personality. It's less to do with his politics. I just don't like. I don't like that type of person. That type of guy who says that everything's so great and I'm the greatest and everything's the best. I'm the best. I can do without that. But I also have a problem when I see the left just making up things, just making up lies about him, and then just hammering that home. I watched this Russiagate nonsense for 3 years as they tried to do that. I mean, it made me sympathetic to the people on the right. I'm definitely sympathetic to people that have been deplatformed. Now, I was kicked off of Twitter in February for jokingly, obviously, suggesting, "Hey, when are we going to go throw Bill Gates into a volcano?" That's all I said. They threw me. They didn't suspend me. They deleted my account. Like, it vanished. I only had like 900 people, so it wasn't like I was doing much of anything with it. But it was like, God damn! Like, they can't even take a joke. They don't even understand a joke, and it was like violation of inciting violence. Like I'm going to drag Bill Gates up and throw him into a volcano. I mean, it's stupid. But but it's not about it being accurate or anything. It's just, it's about keeping you destabilized and keep making you self-censor. Now, this was before the Corona situation. And I was talking about throwing Bill Gates in a volcano. Think I didn't have those thoughts afterwards, but I know that I can't type something like that on Twitter. I have a new account now, I'm back, but I can't type something like that on Twitter because I know what could possibly happen. So that's a really devious form of censorship that we're now experiencing, which is self-censorship. And how do you quantify self-censorship? How do you measure something that you might have said but didn't say? I mean, it's really diabolical because they can get you to not talk about these certain topics just because you're afraid of what the repercussions could be. And like, so it's been, you know, the role of big tech in this election in particular has been really telling because they're 100% in the bag for Biden. And it shows. And what they've been doing is, you know, it's funny because the left talked about for almost four years, Russian interference and the integrity of our election. And we're getting interference from a foreign government in our election. They spent $100,000 on Facebook ads, which is nothing. And all this, it's like, okay, if we're going to have the conversation about election interference, let's talk about election interference from big tech. Let's talk about election interference from, you know, a foreign nation, Russia. Okay, let's talk about foreign nation, Israel. Let's talk about that. Are we going to do that? No, probably not. So it's turned into this argument that you're not allowed to have. It's like we have to talk about the integrity of our voting system, but we're not allowed to talk about that group or this group or that. We can only focus on the establishment boogeyman, which is Russia and QAnon people are skewing the election, but we're not allowed to talk about the overt, right, blatant, in-your-face censorship by the platforms themselves. So it's a bit of a joke, and unfortunately, it's not getting any better. It doesn't seem to be going that direction. We had Mark Zuckerberg and Jack Dorsey on, answering questions to the Senate. I guess I forget which panel it was, but. You know, we all know what's going to happen. They're going to go, oh, you know, we didn't do anything and we're not sure. And, you know, and they'll blame, you know, somebody else and it'll continue. So it's a real big problem for us. And I think people are starting to figure, take the election out of it because yeah, they've skewed the election and all that, but just in general, going forward, like we don't have any sort of platform for free speech, and it's because they've rigged it against us.
They have, and it's extremely concerning. I don't know if you witnessed what happened in Australia with a few Facebook posts where people were getting arrested over certain Facebook posts, which is how bad it was getting here. It's completely changed the landscape, and I think you touched on something pretty important where people are so concerned about even what they put on there that they're holding back. So it's no longer become a platform of free speech at all, obviously, over the last however many years. It's just simply people will not put what they're thinking in those platforms. Yes, there's a lot of other ones popping up, but it doesn't really seem like they get the same traction or they have the same sort of reach as obviously the big ones. So it's extremely concerning, and I couldn't agree more with you regarding Trump. If you had have asked me 3 years ago if I'd agree with anything on him, I would have laughed and I would have thought there's something wrong with you if you think I'm even going to get close to agreeing with anything that he says. But if you followed this correctly and you actually spent time looking into how he has been treated from the big media and from the big tech companies, it's very hard to argue that he's had a fair deal in any of this and that he's been treated appropriately or treated in the same way that Biden's been treated. I guess the argument with a lot of the allegations leading up to the current election was that the proof was not available with Hunter Biden's laptop and that basically that it hadn't been there'd been no convictions regarding what he'd said. There's the information on there was too new, I guess, to play too much of a a role in the election. So that's what the left was saying. I can only sort of assume that was their reason for not reporting any of it. But even if a slither of the information on the laptop or a slither of the information on the text was true, we're looking at some horrific, horrific information. And the fact that there is a huge percentage of the population that didn't even see that is so concerning.
Mm-hmm.
It just really highlights what we've been going through with big tech controlling the information. And you get to Trump and what's going on right now, it all seems like this was programmed prior to what's happening. And they discussed it in the debate. They discussed that there was going to be issues with the mail-in ballots and everything. Where are you standing on the great steal? And, you know, do you think that there is even an intention for Trump right now to leave? Do you think he's planning on leaving? Do you think it's something that he's going to fight tooth and nail? Or on the flip side of it, do you think both parties are simply, you know, working in cahoots and they were expecting a greater revolt from the public here, and they're just pushing us until they get that revolt, and they're going to continue to push, and they're waiting for some sort of mass action? Because for me, I feel like they would have expected, with Trump saying, no, fuck off, I'm not going anywhere, I think they would have expected more of a revolt from his supporter base. But you really haven't seen that. Mm-hmm. You've really only seen the left sort of getting ready to riot, and you know, you could go into how that's funded and all of that. But we haven't seen that. So where do you see this going? We've got the great steal on one side, and then we've got Biden declaring the victory. We've got a month or so until the inauguration. So what's... where do you see us going over this coming month?
Well, I'll tell you, I think, you know, I watched, like the world did, I watched these rallies that they... I didn't go to any of them, but I watched Trump show up in an event and there'd be 40, 50, 60,000 people going crazy. I watched lines of cars with flags and Trump flags and banners and all this stuff. And Joe Biden couldn't get 8 people to show up at his rallies, and when he did, they were half the people that you'd see there were like staffers and things like that. And then, but you expect me to believe that he got 80 million votes when he couldn't get 8 people to show up? I mean, it doesn't make any sense. There's no way. And Obama, you know, pulled, you know, 70 million people, but he was packing stadiums. So what, Joe Biden got 10 million more voters than Obama based on a platform of nothing will fundamentally change and you nationwide mask mandates? I'm sorry, there's no possible way that happened. Now I understand that there's this percentage of the people that would vote for that didn't vote for Joe Biden. They voted against Donald Trump. And if it had been Joe Biden or it had been a cardboard cutout of Joe Biden, they would have voted for that person anyway. And so I get that, but there's not 80 million of those people. And I think he stole it. I think the Democrats stole it. I think they stole the election. I think they're a bunch of dirty cheaters. I think they've always... I think both sides are cheaters, don't get me wrong, but the left has no enthusiasm. I mean, I've made this point to people before. It's like, just imagine, if you will, what it looked like on Inauguration Day in 2017 when Trump won, and you've got like Hillary Clinton and Tom Perez, the head of the Democratic National Convention, and you've got Debbie Wasserman Schultz, one of her criminal lieutenants, and, you know, and all these people that have just gotten their teeth kicked in by Donald Trump. And they're going, okay, this can never happen again. We've got 4 years to make sure that this never happens again. We're going to find the best person. We're going to do the best campaign. We're going to do all this. And you get Joe fucking Biden as your answer? Are you trying to lose?
Exactly. That's the only answer. For me, that's the only answer, is that they're trying to lose. There can't be someone that shit. That can't be the pick. It cannot be the choice. And Kamala Harris as well, as a VP.
She's worse than him.
Yeah, she's worse than him. The only thing that there's not many positives, in my opinion, with Trump's tenure, but one of the big positives that I think has come out of all of this is the silencing of sort of celebrity endorsers. Mm. I feel like they're getting kicked to the ground, essentially.
They are. They're embarrassing themselves.
They're embarrassing themselves. Whereas in the past, elections have come around and the celebrities have had this pull. They've had this pull over the population, especially on the Democrat and the left side. Same with out here, where, you know, they've either done concerts or whatever fucking bullshit has been bought into. People are definitely turning away from listening to these celebrity endorsers with Trump and with the way he sort of changed the state of politics. Yeah. But I agree with you, and it makes me think with the Biden and how did they end up after 4 years putting Biden in? It's beyond me. And the running mate in Kamala Harris, both flawed candidates, extremely flawed candidates. They had many other options which they pushed to the side. There's a lot of reasons to make me think this. Either they were setting up to lose, but then you think, well, why would they go through this whole process with rigging and screwing the election if they were setting him up to lose? To set him up so Kamala, he can get in and Kamala Harris can then take over, which is another possibility. Yeah. But I personally am leaning towards the sort of great divide rather than the great reset. They were pushing for a great divide here, which they haven't seen. And I think that was really what they were after. And, you know, everyone I was speaking to leading up to this election, they all believed it was going to be essentially civil war the day after election. Yeah. We haven't seen it. We've seen calm. We've seen sort of almost people worn out by the narrative and just completely over it. So I guess, do you think Trump's going? I mean, do you think he is going to just step aside and walk away if they don't get this this unrest, which they've obviously been pushing for this unrest over the past year, okay. Right? We can agree with that. They've The powers that be are pushing for this unrest. They don't seem to be getting it right now. Do you think he's going to just step aside and walk away?
No, I don't. I think that if he was an establishment government guy like Al Gore back in 2000, who they pulled aside and said, listen, Al, we've got big plans for 2001. We need W in there. He's instrumental in this. We're going to give you some money. We're going to make you the environmental guru. You're going to be very wealthy, but you're out. And Al Gore says, I'm out. Donald Trump isn't playing that game. There are some aspects of him that I like. He's not an established Washington, D.C. person. I do know that he still interacts with these people and has for many years, but he's not a political guy like in the way Joe Biden is with almost 50 years in office. I think that if I were Donald Trump right now and I saw the sort of voting irregularities and the sort of election fuckery that was going on that night, I wouldn't leave either. And the left is so, they're so disingenuous. They're such dickheads. Now they're just constantly saying, he's got to go. He's ruining our democracy by not going. He doesn't have to go, you dumbasses. He doesn't have to go for another 8 weeks. Like, where do you want him to go? You want him to leave early? I mean, I know they do, but they're like, he's ruining democracy. No, he is not. If the roles were reversed and someone stole the election from your guy, you'd be saying count every vote, especially. I mean, if 139,000 ballots showed up at 3:30 in the morning in Michigan, and every single one of them was marked for Donald Trump, the left would be shitting. They would be rioting right now. Mm. So when this happens for Biden, they're like, oh, it's fine. I mean, the hypocrisy is off the charts. But Trump should. Again, to be clear, I don't care. I don't have a dog in this fight, right? Red team, blue team. If gun to my head, I would choose Trump over Biden because I see Biden as like sprinting into the new world order, whereas Trump is just kind of like walking briskly, you know. But I think that if I were Trump, I would stay. I would stay and I would stay and fight. I would stay and count these votes. I mean, keep in mind, you still have 73 million people that voted for you. They want you to stay and fight. You know, he's the type of guy that will stay and fight. Now, I know the left is like, oh, this is horrible. How dare he do this? This is impinging on everything American. First of all, it's not. It is not in any way, shape, or form. This is what you do when you feel like an election is getting stolen from you from a variety of states. You've got Dominion voting machine flaws. You've got random ballots showing up in the middle of the night. You've got the fact that they stopped counting in all these states, which they never, well, we're going to stop counting. We'll pick it up tomorrow. Like, what are you talking about? Yeah. This is
that was
like,
a strange,
we went to bed.
Just
Trump was ahead
in
when
Pennsylvania,
we went to bed.
Wasn't it? Was it
Pennsylvania? Yeah, Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, Michigan, Arizona, Nevada. They all stopped counting. It's like, why did you stop counting? Well, we know why they stopped counting. They stopped counting because they needed to mix in all the other votes. They needed to have the Dominion voting machines do their things or whatever. I mean, if this is proven, if it is discovered that the left was cheating and Donald Trump actually did win and Donald Trump becomes president again for the second time, then we get the chaos that we've been waiting on, because then it's going to be on and in a crazy, insane sort of way. The left, fueled by the financed by the Soros groups and people like that, none of this is organic violence. I mean, the Antifa people, they're out there throwing Molotov cocktails underarm, you know, because they can't even throw it right. You know, they're so weak and flimsy and methed out and heroined out and everything. You know, I mean, this is a strange crowd right now on the left, and they're sitting around waiting for instructions on what to do. When are the riots going to start? If their guy does not win, if in the end they recalculate everything and it goes to Trump, then that will be the spark that sets this place ablaze. And I'm not looking forward to that, obviously, but if the plan is for chaos, then just having Donald Trump win would create chaos. But if you had it look like, yes, Biden was going to win, like with a big head fake and then back to Trump, that is like chaos times a million. I mean, that will really freak people out. And that could be it. That could be the plan.
That's it, for sure. And it does seem like that's what's happening. I mean, who knows if Biden's going to be able to be alive by the election day. I mean,
I know.
Like,
I mean,
in all honesty, every time you see him speak, it's concerning. And people that are pro-Biden blindly, and this happens all the time in politics when they're pro one side or the other, I feel like they mustn't be watching him, or they mustn't even be seeing him communicate or address or get up there and speak, because the guy really genuinely has some serious health concerns, clearly.
And I'm not even trying to be a jerk about it. I'm just trying to be objective and say, like, that is a man that is unfit mentally for this job. This is a really hardcore job that we see pictures, before and after pictures of presidents when they go in, they look like, you know, they look like it's rough. And yeah, Biden's been sort of in that for a long, long time. So I'm sure he can navigate that, but he's unfit. He's physically unfit. And of course, maybe that's the plan. I'm trying to think a couple steps ahead. And if in fact, they win with the steal. It's like they win either way. So if they steal the election and Biden gets in, they've got their guy. They can run this new world order, great reset thing and just go that direction. If Trump gets in, then they still win, because then they've got the riot component and the division component, and they can just ramp up the insanity there and create more chaos. It's just a matter of what they need. And Trump has been like the great divider. You know, he's been very polarizing, but I'll take him over Biden, simply because I feel like he's a little bit more of an obstacle for the globalist people to impose their plan on the rest of humanity. I feel like with Joe Biden, he's like, what do you need me to do? I'll do it. Let's go do it tomorrow. And with Trump will be like, I'm not doing that. I'm gonna cancel this deal. I'm gonna fire that guy. I'm gonna put this person in. I'm gonna do all that stuff. And they'll still probably get their way in the end, but at least he'll make it a little bit more complicated for them. But I don't have a whole lot of hope on either candidate, unfortunately.
No, and realistically, this is what they want us doing. They want us discussing this election, which is like in most, the West, like in Australia and the US, it's the same. It's one big theater show. And it becomes extremely clear, the theater of it all, when you start looking at Trump's history with this COVID situation and how he's handled that. And to be honest, from afar, I can't say from afar and not living there, I can't say I can look at his decision-making process during this time and the way he's discussed it as a positive. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to sit here and look at his conversation points and how he's communicated the severity or the whatever of the virus, whatever he believes it to be, real or, you know, or potential cures / treatments. The way he's communicated it, I think it's been pretty detrimental to the public for sure. But what we get to right now is this speedy rollout of a vaccine, which both sides are agreeing on and both sides are pushing, which is a concern that you've got two sides so strongly pro this vaccine, which has been rushed through. They're saying it's 95% effective, which is just, it's never been heard of to find a vaccine this quick that's 95% effective. No. But no matter what side you stand on, left or right, both of these jokers are pushing it. So for you, where are you sitting on the vaccine? I saw in the UK that they're pushing it out within a couple of months. So, mm-hmm. I mean, they're already, you know, they have their rollout plan. Where do you believe the vaccine sits in? I know you've discussed it a bit on your podcast, and yeah. I'd just like to hear, because, you know, no matter where we go with this election theatre bullshit, they are rolling out this vaccine and it is going to be extremely difficult for the population going forward if you're against this. Yeah. So I just, what's your thoughts on how this is going to?
Yeah, and I'm against it for sure. I have anxiety and dread because of it, because I know a couple things will happen. First of all, they're going to lie about it. The media will lie. Big Pharma will lie. Whoever's president will lie, because that's what they do. They lie. In the United States in 1986, they passed a law that made it illegal for you to sue a vaccine manufacturing company for product liability. So you cannot, if you get a vaccine and it injures you, you can't sue anybody. You can go through what they call the VAERS court, Vaccine Adverse Effect Relief System, or something like that. It's basically a kangaroo court that is set up by the Department of Justice and staffed with members, ex-Big Pharma members, to be this judging panel. And then they determine whether or not anybody gets any money for vaccine damages. But if you do get any money from vaccine damages, you have to sign a non-disclosure that has a provision in it that will claw back 10 times the amount that you received if you open your mouth and talk about it. So you can't sue Big Pharma, but you can go through this rigged VAERS court and get some money. Now, every time somebody buys a vaccine in the United States, 75 cents from that goes into this pot. And this pot has grown and grown and grown. And the money that's in there is used to pay out these people that have gone through the VAERS court. Now, through that rigged court that is a joke, they've still paid out $4.2 billion in settlements. And to put that in perspective, that's more money than the Catholic Church has paid out to settle rape claims worldwide. So the vaccine injury component to society is not well known in the United States. It's very much buried. And part of the reason why it's buried is because we have a very unusual relationship between Big Pharma and the mainstream media in the United States and in New Zealand. Those are the only two countries that are allowed to advertise pharmaceutical drugs on television. So what happens is that if you're an American and you are watching your nightly news and you're thinking that you're getting all of the important information about a particular topic or all, you know, important information about all of the important topics, you might think, well, I've never seen a big expose on my nightly news about the dangers of vaccines. I've just never seen it. So therefore, it must not exist because I've never seen it. But the reason why it doesn't exist is because the mainstream media gets 60% of their ad revenue from Big Pharma. So they can't talk about it. Or else they'll get $1 billion pulled the next day by some, you know, the president of Merck will go pull it out of NBC and say, we're not advertising with you anymore because you ran a story about how vaccines are giving kids autism. So we're in a really weird spot here because I know about the vaccine, you know, dangers and things like that. And there's some people that know about it, a percentage in America and growing fast. But the overwhelming majority of people have no idea that there's even vaccine adverse reactions, let alone there's some court, let alone they paid billions of dollars. They don't know anything about that. They assume that vaccines are safe because every doctor here in the United States is always trying to sell you, hey, are you, you know, how are we doing on your vaccines? We need another one here. How are your kids doing? Let's check them on the schedule. If you go to pharmacies here, you know, drugstores where you buy aspirin and Tylenol and whatever, some of those places will give you a $10 gift card for getting a free flu shot from them. So let's think about that from like a business standpoint. You're running, a pharmacy, you're running a drugstore, you're selling all kinds of things. You're going to give somebody $10 to come in and take a vaccine that costs you money. Why would you be doing that? And the answer is because if you take the flu shot, you're going to get sick and you're going to come back in that store and buy $70 worth of medicines and things like that. So they've subsidized it, not to the point where it's free, to the point where they'll actually pay you to take it. And so that to me is a huge red flag. But once again, most of the people in America don't know that. They don't understand the flu shot. That $4.2 billion that's been paid out, half of it, a little more than half of it, has been paid out to settle claims from the flu shot. And the flu shot's been around for 70 years. They've had vaccines for that. And so what? We're going to rush a vaccine, an RNA vaccine that has never been tested on human beings for a virus, the COVID-19 coronavirus that has a 99.74% survival rate if you're in the most compromised category, or 99.9997% cure rate for everybody else. It's like, that's just people that are bad at math. They just can't figure out the math.
And it's, in addition to that, it's for a virus that we still have no clarity on how it started, how it's spreading, why is it spreading, who is the most highest risk. They haven't provided us with any consistent, accurate information. You can be, and I think this is why there's growing more like hesitancy towards a vaccine, not so much because of the risks. I think people are growing, there's an awareness of the risks. But people are skeptical of COVID. They're skeptical of all of the information we've had on COVID. So they want to roll this out without us having any idea whether there's going to be another COVID in 3 months' time. Because if it was from Wuhan, let's say it's from the markets, let's say it's from the lab, whatever else, what are they doing to stop that? They haven't done anything to stop that or to slow the potential spread of another one. So I think people are hesitant to get a vaccine when this could happen again in a couple of months very easily. And obviously, if you look at the plan and Bill Gates obviously saying, look, the second one will have a greater impact and having a giggle or whatever about it. Mm-hmm. I think there is a growing awareness around it, but it is still a conversation that if you bring up, I don't know what it's like over there in the US, but if you bring up not taking this vaccine, it is like you are the devil.
Yeah. There's a lot of that here in the US for sure. But I'm in agreement with you. People are starting to wake up to there's questions. I've got questions. You know, it's like I've got questions about what this is, where it came from, how it's spreading. I've got questions about why the media is so wrong about some things, why they said do one thing early on, then they changed their mind and said do the other thing, and said we never said the first thing. And it's like, what are you talking about? We've got, you know, documentation of you saying this. We've got masks, everybody's got to wear a mask here, but then if you look on the side of the box, on the side of the N95 mask box, it says this does not prevent the transmission of coronavirus. And you're like, and you show that to someone and they go, I don't know what you're talking about. And you're like, it says right here it doesn't work. And they're like, wear your mask. And you're like, fuck off. I mean, this is, we're having like arguments with people here. Everything is like heightened because, I mean, the media is lying to us about a variety of things. The coronavirus is one of them, but we also have people that have, as you do as well, lost their jobs, lost their businesses, been cooped up inside, and they're getting bad information, information that even the most dumbed down person is like, this doesn't make any sense to me. I have to walk one direction down an aisle in a grocery store because coronavirus? What? What does this mean? You can be in a restaurant, you have to wear your mask from the front door to your table. But then when you sit down, you can take your mask off. And then if you get up to go to the bathroom, you have to put it on. And now in California, they said in between bites, you need to put your mask back down. It's like, stop. This, like, it's a litmus test to see how stupid people are, is what I've been thinking. And it's like, I'm not saying that the virus doesn't exist. My mother-in-law got tested for it, tested positive, and was really sick. But she was sick for a week and she's 75. She's not dead. We're not stacking up bodies on street corners like they told us that would happen. We're not Niall Ferguson in the UK with his predictions about the death rate and everything. It's nowhere near this. I mean, so.
And just to touch on that, a few points that you just had then, which I think are extremely important that we have to pay attention to, the business impact, which people get really upset when you discuss, but this is wiping out small business. I mean, tech had started to wipe out your ability with small business, and also the sort of legal hoops had really made, especially in Australia. So running a small business without a HR department, without a, you know, it had become growingly harder to operate your own form of income and run a small to medium business. This is essentially wiping it out. It's taking the power away from you to make your own money and to do, you know, to operate a business. That's tragic. And that is got to be part of their plan as far as reset and as far as with this wiping away an entire type of workforce, whether it be, you know, how we do certain jobs and whatever else. That's what's happened. So they've wiped away a whole workforce, which is probably never going to find work again in the current environment. And to make it even, you know, more difficult, this vaccine is going to be mandatory in a lot of workplaces. So you're not even going to have a choice. So if you want to make money to eat and to basically go on, you know, enjoying your normal life, you're not going to have a choice. They're going to make it to the point where you have to take this vaccine. And it's extremely concerning how that's playing out here. I don't know. I'm guessing it's pretty similar over there as far as I think these unemployment rates in the US and same with out here, they can't be right that they're rolling out. It can't be in any way truthful.
No. Everything we're getting lied to on every front, and the vaccine. They say, well, we're not going to make it mandatory, and you know what? They probably won't make it mandatory. They'll just make it impossible to live, you know, without it. They'll make it so that you can't get on a plane, or you can't renew your driver's license, or you can't do, you know, I mean, whatever. They'll find ways to make it. Make your life difficult if you don't participate in this. But we're starting to see this rollout of this great reset on the heels of this. Not a coincidence, of course. And part of this program for this World Economic Forum's Great Reset is that the current paradigm needs to be destroyed in order for this new Great Reset to take place. And it's like if everybody's living in like the February world where everything was relatively normal, we know how to operate in that paradigm. We know it might not be perfect. We've got a lot of problems, but we know how to operate in it. So if they said, hey, we've got this Great Reset in February, we'd be like, I don't know. I'm good with what I've got. I know how to work it. I know how to operate it. You take your Great Reset And you go, you know, we're not interested in it. But now after they destroyed everything and there's nothing, you know, businesses are going and gone. I think there's a second wave of that coming where they're going to finish the 100%. Job on all these small and medium sized businesses. And it's like, then after that happens and then they'll be like, hey, we have this great new reset for you that includes universal basic income, which will cover all your costs. And you're like, okay, now I'm a little bit more interested. Tell me more about this great reset. And then of course they go into their marketing campaign and you know, oh, it's going to be great. We're going to have self-driving cars and there'll be no carbon emissions. And you know, you'll get a universal basic income and you'll live in a smart city and all that stuff that sounds nice. But they don't understand that there's strings attached to it. You know, there's that you think you're going to get a universal, you think the American government's going to give you free money for nothing. There's strings attached. It'll be tied to, you know, keeping your social credit score high once that rolls out, or you can't get the UBI unless you're up to date on your vaccines, or you can't, you know, or whatever. I mean, they'll tie that to compliance as well. So I think one of the things that we've learned about 2020 is that it's not about the science, it's about compliance. It's about convincing you to do things that you don't want to do, whether that be put on a mask or take a vaccine or you know, agree to put a contact tracing app on your phone or cancel your Thanksgiving plans with your family because some dickhead governor like Gavin Newsom said you're not allowed to meet for longer than 2 hours. Meanwhile, he's at a dinner with 14 of his buddies for a $400 a plate dinner. You know, I mean, so the hypocrisy is on full display for us. They kind of want that, I think. It's part of a psychological operation to demoralize us. And I'd say that it's been very effective with contradictory information. Yes, do this. Don't wear a mask. Fauci says, don't wear a mask. You don't need a mask. And then it's like a couple months later, oh my God, you got to wear a mask. So what are you trying to kill grandma if you don't have your mask on? You're like, yeah, but you told me not to. They're like, we did nothing of the sort. And you're like, I have an article from the CDC saying masks don't work. And they're like, the CDC says you got to wear a mask. I'm like, okay, well, I have an article from that same organization that says masks are bullshit. Now what do we do? You know? And so we've got people that are like, you know, completely trusting their mainstream media and they're fearful and they're wearing masks in their car when they're driving around by themselves and everything. Boy, I mean, I'll tell you, I don't have a whole lot of faith, unfortunately, in the people. The general public has been dumbed down to a point where it's really difficult to get through to them. And so you asked about like, what's my feeling on the vaccine? And my feeling on the vaccine has been for the last couple of months, I'll talk to anybody about what I know about the history of vaccines and how dangerous they are and the globalist agenda and what they're trying to do with these vaccines. I'll give you from the beginning to the end, I'll lay it all out for you. But I'll tell you what I'm not prepared to do. I'm not prepared to get dragged into an argument with somebody that is unwilling to look at any of the alternative facts, look at the facts, the alternative version of reality that they're not getting on their mainstream nightly news. If they're telling me vaccines are safe and that I'm a conspiracy theorist for saying that there's questions about them, I'm not going to waste my time with that person anymore. I've gotten to the point now where my feeling for those particular people that want to argue about this stuff, about the vaccine, while doing no research on their own, is you want the vaccine, you think the vaccine is safe, then go get it, dummy. Go be the first person in line. But I don't want to hear any complaining when you have massive side effects from this. I don't want to hear, I think I made a huge mistake. Of course you're making a huge mistake. I'm trying to tell you you're making a huge mistake. I'm trying to lay it out with evidence and science and statistics and all that stuff. And all the argument is from these morons is you're anti-science. Well, if I'm anti-science, debate me on the science then.
I couldn't agree with you more on so many points there. And the anti-science thing is something that's been programmed into us, I think.
Of course.
I don't know for how long, let's say 50 years, to take away our spirituality, our belief systems in whatever else. It's just trust science, which is complete rubbish when your science is coming to you from big tech platforms.
Right.
And there's such great information on the vaccines and the issues with the vaccines, and it's so readily available, like Colbert Report's doco on Bill Gates, things that happened in India. It's very easy to find the information if you know where to look. But the problem is these people aren't finding it because they're in their own rabbit hole of whatever their own agenda is, and they're stuck going down that rabbit hole. And they're willing to argue their points without even taking consideration the other information that's out there, because they go off everything that big tech's feeding them, which is you know, it's regurgitated information. And it's extremely concerning. Out here, even if you discuss the alternatives to getting a vaccine, you're in big trouble. And people are losing their jobs. People are in huge. It's an authoritarian state, and it's extremely concerning. So
yeah,
I guess
I talked to. But when I was at Anarchapulco that year in 2019. Yeah. I was chatting with David Icke, and he was getting ready to go. We were at the airport, and we were chatting, and we were getting on the same plane and going to Mexico City, and then from Mexico City to LA, and then I was going off, and he was going to stay in LA and the next morning go to Australia. So when I said goodbye to him, I was like, hey, you know, have fun in Australia. And 24 hours later, he was banned. And yeah. And the reason why he was banned was because of his vaccine stance. And Dr. Sherry Tenpenny was banned from there as well. And she was a speaker at Anarchapulco, and Del Bigtree was banned from there, and he was a speaker as well. So we're seeing that. We're seeing that Australia has this really their line in the sand. I mean, their governmental line in the sand is if you disparage vaccines in any way, you're out of here. You're not even coming in, you know. So it's been disappointing for us to see that, you know. The thing is that, like, the Australian people are so great and so fun and so funny, and they get it and everything, but the government, my God, they're such shitheads. They're over the top, like, in a way that, you know, like, they're showing off or something, like, to see who can be the most authoritarian component of this whole thing. And, like, Australia's doing that, and we're like, we're watching this, we're going, God damn, they're literally dragging some lady, some pregnant woman away in handcuffs from her home because she was going to do, she posted on Facebook about, you know, having a protest or a rally or something. And then we think that's as bad as it gets. And then you see New Zealand's like, well, we've built quarantine camps. And I was like, okay, well, now they're taking the lead. But what do you have, Australia? Where are you coming back to?
You hear on the weekend, and we shut down South Australia over about six cases because of a pizza shop, which was very interesting what they titled it. Did you hear what they titled it?
No, what did they title it?
Pizzagate.
Really?
And it just made me think, and I couldn't, just with everything that's been going on, and no matter how much you believe, I don't want to get into the Pizzagate thing, like I've got my own thoughts on it, but they've tried to suppress every bit of information around Pizzagate. From day one, they've tried to suppress every single piece of information. Yeah. The fact that they're calling this shutdown of, say, South Australia Pizzagate because it was a cluster at a pizza restaurant just makes me think this is another part of the plan that they're trying to destroy / remove any trace of that saga and of that piece of information that went through the internet and they couldn't control it. Mm-hmm. The Australian government is extremely concerning. And when what you said before is exactly right. I think there's a few factors in Australia and New Zealand because we're both very similar countries. We have a group of citizens that are very grateful, I think, for, we're not so much patriotic as we are grateful for our country and the sort of liberties we have here, as far as maybe not liberties, but as far as our lifestyle here, it's a very laid back, easy lifestyle. You know, there's very low unemployment, there's very low homeless rates and things like that, although we do have homeless and things like that. But we have a very good life in Australia. So we feel like our government upholds that because it's obviously more of a socialist sort of economy in the way that our, you know, our healthcare system and everything else is, you know, we can go in at the drop of a hat to get things fixed by the government and it's all covered. So we put a lot of trust in our government because of that, because we have a great healthcare system. We have great schooling and all of that. So there is an extreme amount of, I guess it's more than trust. It's just sort of, we just sit back and watch, I guess, we just watch and let things happen. Even with protesting over the time, we haven't been too much of a nation that has stood up and really protest like in Europe and things like that over serious issues where you see them constantly protesting over issues that matter to them. It is a fear thing, but it's also like the public is dumbed down in a huge way out here. We are. I don't know how it happened, but it's happened over time. But yeah, that South Australia, I'm waiting for someone in the alternate sort of media space to jump on how they're reporting that in South Australia, because it's Pizzagate everywhere, which is very interesting.
Yeah, that's an interesting way to do it. There's certain topics that are just off. The minute you get on it, you're going to have problems. For me, if I mention that particular school shooting in Connecticut, that's a deal killer. I mean, I've been suspended by Facebook four times. In 2019, I was suspended by Facebook four times for posts about that particular school shooting or alleged school shooting or however we want to phrase it. I was suspended four times for posts about that in 2019. But here's the kicker. The posts that got me suspended were all from 2017. They just 2 years later decided to retroactively go through my previous posts and suspend me for them.
Interesting.
Yeah. And
we were seeing, I mean, when we originally started talking, we were seeing a lot of false flag. I'm not saying the one in particular you're referencing was or wasn't. I know you at that time were very strongly under the opinion that it was. That we were seeing a lot of false flag shooting with COVID and all of that. It seems to have slowed down. They haven't, either there's not a need right now for it. I mean, we could go on a whole nother tangent here, but I mean, are you still under the opinion, like you, because you were very strongly, you know, you did believe that was, and many others were. Are you still under that opinion, or is there your thoughts changed on it, or?
No. No, I there's still, there's been a lot of these false flags. Not recently though. And we keep here, like we're not hoping for one, obviously, but we're sort of kind of expecting one. I'll tell you why we were expecting them, because, they were running simulations. The government was running all kinds of crazy simulations about election day. Things like simulating cyber attacks on power grids, cyber attacks on water treatment facilities, and cyber attacks on self-driving cars, hijacking self-driving cars and driving them into rows of people that were waiting in line to vote. Those were three things that the American government had role played extensively through simulations in the months leading up to the election. So when I start hearing about things like that, then I assume, well, this is definitely the setup for a false flag, where they run simulations first. They find out, you know, how this is all going to work. And then what do you know, on election day, something happens exactly like it was simulated. Well, it turned out that we didn't see anything like that, thank God. But I'm not totally convinced that we're out of the woods yet. I mean, I still think that's one of their favorite tricks. The false flag works very well. It's been around for a long, long time because it's simple and it takes advantage of people's trust and belief, or you know, this disbelief that anything like that could ever be caused by somebody else and blamed on a different faction. But in fact, it happens all the time. So I've been a little surprised that we didn't see that for the election. But I'd say we're not out of the woods yet. And if we see any sort of civil unrest in the form of, say, Trump does become the president again, let's say that they go through and go through the courts, they find out there was fraud, they inaugurate Trump, then there will be a lot of people that are mad in general. There will be a lot of people that get paid to be mad on top of that. And then you're in a prime position for a false flag attack, then something to blame on, I don't know, Trump, you know, Trump people, MAGA hat wearing, a guy with a MAGA hat came in and shot up a, you know, a church or something. You know, I mean, you could just imagine the types of fake stories that they could concoct to get the left even more divided against the right and things like that. But that's what they want. They want us divided. I mean, they've done a good job already.
They do. And obviously they use terrorism, the word terrorism, for so many years. And I noticed, obviously, with Trump's proposed withdrawal from Afghanistan, we heard the threat of terrorism and the severe threat of, you know, against our Western values that terrorism is playing. And Mitch McConnell saying, you know, there's still huge issues and concerns. But is that boogeyman being played out so badly that people are now, that's why they've started the COVID thing? I know it's a bit off topic, but I just feel like they just tried to drum it up again recently, obviously, with Trump making a few rash decisions in the Middle East and things like that. This terrorism thing and the attack against how they're so hell-bent on coming to our country and blowing us up, surely that's dumbing down.
Yeah, they need a new invisible enemy. And they've had this invisible enemy of terrorism. Now they've got this invisible enemy of COVID, which is working really well. And they've sort of like, well, let's put terrorism on the back burner. Let's focus on the COVID thing. We're having so much success scaring the shit out of people. Let's continue down this path. But as that starts to fade out, I wouldn't be surprised if we saw a resurgence in terrorism again. Maybe we'll get a combination. We'll get, it'll be a bioterrorist attack where it's somebody released a new strain of COVID, COVID-20, you know, or COVID-21 or something like that. And then here we go. And of course it will be, it'll be Iran. It's got to be Iran that does it, right? Because we've got a hard on for blowing them up big time. And so, you know, you can almost envision the scenarios now. It's like that game Clue, when it was like the butler did it in the library with the lead pipe. But it's like Iran released a bioweapon in Central Park, you know, and you can just see them like coming up with these crazy stories. I envision more, you know, I envision a false flags coming back into favor. They never really go away too far with these people, and they tend to not be very creative. So they run the same plays over and over again, which is like Bashar al-Assad has gassed his own people. And we're like, and then here's the video of like people getting water thrown in their face and trying to wash their eyes out. And you're like, okay, well, that looks a little fishy. And then CNN is like, CNN's reporter live on the scene here in Syria, and we're looking at this, and she's like, we've got a report that the bomb was in this backpack. And she picks up the backpack and sniffs it. She's like, yeah. And it was a chemical, like sarin gas attack. And she picked up the backpack and sniffed it and put it down. I was like, you know what, man? There are people that are watching this that are like, oh my God, this is crazy. There's really gas attacks going on here. And it's like, the reporter just sniffed the gas, the bag with the gas canister. It's all fake. Don't you
and
see?
It's so egocentric to think that their entire focus is us.
Yes.
Continually. Like the stupidity behind that is that's what baffles me the most. And I think that's the biggest trick. They've definitely done it in the US and they've done it out here as well, to think that only our countries are the happiest, most safe, comfortable countries in the world. But when you leave the US and you're like, you realize, oh shit, there's actually parts of third world, you know, parts of the US are third world, parts in Australia are pretty much third world. Yeah. And no, we don't have it sorted. We definitely don't have all the answers here, but they've created this boogeyman that puts us at the center of it. It's really well done. Just one thing I wanted to touch on, or maybe two things I want to touch on quickly before I let you go, mate. As far as what's going forward, one thing I found really interesting, we've been chatting about, you know, a biosecurity threat or whatever else. And what we had last week in Australia is one of our largest banks shut down every entire branch in Australia, went very quietly unnoticed over a small security threat. I think this is what they're going to start doing for sure. I think the banking system and the internet is going to have some big down periods. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're going to see the fear coming up, because when this all started with COVID, people were taking their money out of the bank, and there was that sort of progression of holy shit, we need to start planning for the world collapsing. And I think they're going to start testing us with this inability to access our money in the current form. And, you know, it was a hoax. I'm just reading the article again now to make sure I've got it right. But it was a hoax on the NAB, National Australia Bank, which is, if not the biggest bank in Australia, where they had to close every single branch across the country. Wow. Which, if a small hoax can do that.
Yeah, I wrote about that a little bit in the new book about bank holidays. And I kind of joke about, it's like, a bank holiday is when your money goes on vacation, but it doesn't tell you, you know, it just kind of leaves and they close the banks down. And they did that in Cyprus a couple of years ago. They had this big a big banking crisis there where they locked all the accounts. They did a bail-in haircut. And I made sure to put in this new book that, you know, I'm not sure how it is in every other country, but in the United States, when you open up your bank account and all that paperwork that you're signing and filling out that you never read, there's a provision in there that says that when you put your money into the bank, it becomes the property of the bank. Yeah. You become an unsecured creditor of the bank. And so there's this belief that most people have. I had for a long, long time too, until I found out about this, that, oh, it's my money. I'll just go to the bank and get my money out and everything. And it's like, hang on a second. You better read your contract again. If something goes wrong with this bank, if something goes wrong with your small little local bank, we have something called the FDIC, which is the Financial Deposit Insurance Corporation, which is like a backstop. It's an insurance policy on all your deposits up to $250,000 in each account. So if the local branch manager cleans out the vault and disappears in your little bank, you're going to be fine. They've got insurance that'll come in, make you whole and all that. But if there's a systemic problem with the banking system, then the FDIC only has about 2% of total deposits on reserve. So you're going to get $2 out of every $100 you have. Not very good. And so that is a huge problem. And then the fact that the banks are, we've done bailouts but now we're looking at a concept of bail-ins, where it's like they just keep the deposits that they're holding. And everyone's like, that'll never happen because it's my money. You can't take my money because I'll go down there and demand that you give me my money. It's like, it's not your money, though. That's the thing. They can do it and they will do it. In fact, not only are you not, you're not even second in line, like bondholders are in line in front of you. It's like, so you're in a bad spot. So yeah, take your money out or put your money somewhere or do something else with it. But keeping people thinking like, oh, I'm going to keep my money in the bank and it'll be safe. And if something goes down, I'll just rush and take my money out real quick.
Well, they don't have it.
Go try and take $5,000 in cash out of a bank account right now in the United States. They ask you these days, what's this for? And I've had conversations with a teller. Like I said, I'm not trying to be a jerk to you, teller, but why would I ever tell you what this money is for? I've said, what if I tell you it's for crack cocaine? What if I'm just going to go buy as much crack cocaine as I want right now? What difference does it make? What are you going to do? Tell me I can't take the money out? You know, so we're already having banking problems here. I think it's a reasonable thing to keep your eyes on. You mentioned 100%. The internet and like power and things like the internet going down. They've talked about that. You know, they've teased that a little bit. Send people into chaos.
Yeah, and I don't think crypto is the answer. I'm no expert. I have got a bit personally myself, but I just feel it's still online. It's still potentially controlled. Why would they let us transition to Bitcoin? I watch the Kaiser Report all the time. I mean, I love Max and I love having a listen, but lots of financial analysts sort of moving to supporting crypto. But I just don't know why these trillion-dollar banking systems would just be like, oh, goodbye, see ya, thanks for coming, rather than just setting up their own cryptocurrency. Yeah. So, I think we definitely have to be mindful of that. I'm 100% something's going to happen with it where we can't access our funds over the coming, I don't know, 6 months or something. It's on the agenda. But, mate, look, it's been an incredible catch-up. We could have gone on for hours.
I could talk to you forever.
Yeah, mate. It's so good to see how well you're doing. I can't express how much I'm enjoying your new podcast.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Yeah, for the listeners, subscribe to Macro Aggressions on iTunes, and is it on Spotify and things like
Spotify,
that?
Spotify, iHeartRadio, YouTube, and David Icke's video platform, Iconic.
Yeah, yeah, brilliant. And the books, both books are available on Amazon, are they at the moment?
They are. Yeah.
Yep. So yep. Controlled Demolition of the American Empire. So you can get that on Amazon. And yeah, well, anything else you're working on at the moment, mate?
Well, I'm just working on new episodes for the podcast. And no, the book just came out. So I'm doing as much promotion as I can for that. I think it's really important for people to, you know, to just be aware of this sort of these unusual topics that are going to become very important to us, and to have an understanding of what has happened in the past. We talk about a lot about empires and where they fall into this real predictable cycle. You know, it goes around, and we're in the last stage of the cycle by all accounts. It's obvious. And so I'm trying to wake people up to the fact that we've got some real big problems happening here, not just in America, but worldwide. But and of course, like anything, the first step to fixing them is acknowledging that we have these problems. So I'm trying to get people, you know, awake to that and doing everything I can. So I think the book is helpful. If you're somebody that like knows these topics and you're like, okay, I get it already. Great. I'm glad. Buy the book for somebody else. Buy the book for somebody in your life that doesn't quite have a grasp on this. Also, the Octopus book is really good for that as well.
I was going to try to read the new one before the podcast, but and family got ahead of me. I only had two days. So I was going to spend 2 days reading it while managing children. Didn't work.
That's not going to work.
But the Octopus, if it's anything like the Octopus, it's a great read, and it's a lot enjoyable. Like the Octopus. And it's it takes you through it in a very easy format as well. It's not too heavy, and I couldn't recommend it more. So yeah, you know, jump on Amazon and get it. Is there any your website? Are you still running your website at the moment?
The octopusofglobalcontrol.com is where you can find the Octopus book is available there in digital format. If someone wants to buy it, you just donate $10 or more on PayPal, and I send you EPUB version and a PDF, and then so we can do it that way as well. But I'm accessible. I'm available. If people have questions or concerns, they can email me through the website. And I just feel like it's important to talk about these things, and so I'm gonna do what I can and try and prepare myself for what may be coming. And look, if what we think is coming isn't as bad as we prepared for, well, then that's fine. That's good. But one thing that we have learned in 2020, if nothing else, is that we owe the preppers an apology.
Yeah, they were right.
We were making fun of the preppers, and now it's like, okay. You were right.
Yeah, never again. Never again.
Yeah.
All right, mate. Well, thanks again for joining us. I look forward to catching up in the future and wish you all the best with everything you're doing, and stay safe.
Likewise. Thank you so much, Mark. I'll talk to you soon.
And there you have it, Dead Noise listeners. Charlie Robinson dropping bombs for your ears. Personally, I feel like I could chat to Charlie at least once a week on the show, maybe more. This is my fourth, I believe, podcast I've done with him. And to be honest, he's one of my favorite guests to have and one of my favorite people to listen in the alternate media space. These days, it's very easy to shit on the CNNs or the mainstream news, but what drives me even more insane is bias in the alternate/conspiracy media space. Since Trump coming into power, we have seen the rise of this, and with the right hijacking the conspiracy media space and controlling the narrative to this point. It's been easy for many podcasters to toe the line and boost their own audience by jumping on board this agenda, but there's a shining light of a few, like Charlie, that haven't. I've had to tune out to several podcasts due to this over the last few years, and it's something that's turned me off the alternate media space. If you are constantly supporting one side of a political party, how do you think people are going to take you seriously? It's clear the right has seen the great audience in the conspiracy space and tried to capitalize on it. Trump has seen this and he's tried to capitalize on it. And a few have followed and fallen down the rabbit hole. If you tune into Charlie's podcast, Macro Aggressions, you'll see he touches on all subjects from all sides with an open mind. In addition to this, Charlie has put in the work. You look at his history with the Octopus of Global Control. which has over 500 citated quotes and is a book that keeps you turning the pages. I remember when I first spoke with Charlie, I was fairly timid when it came to topics of government agenda, and we touched on a few of those at the end of the show, but didn't go too deep. For me, at this point in my life, I prefer to discuss things, research them, and make up my own mind rather than have them censored for me. And I hope you, the listeners, feel the same way too. I also want to have a focus on the solution with this podcast, albeit who knows what that is. We touched on the role the banks are playing in this whole agenda, and if the world is going to hell, what's the call? What should we do? It surely doesn't seem wise to keep our money in a banking system that's not working for us, but that also begs the question, what will cash be worth? Over the coming weeks, I have a great show coming out with an expert discussing finite and alternate currencies, not Bitcoin. Essentially, what could be a currency post-apocalypse? I don't mean to put fear out there or try to create panic, but it's hard not to look around and see something concerning is happening. As always, thanks so much for listening. Please subscribe and stay safe out there.